It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. We talk about a lot of topics on this show, and they're always related to my favorite subject, food. So not only do we talk about all kinds of delicious things that we serve up on our plates, but we talk about how food affects our health, the personal health of our individual bodies, the bodies of our families, as well as the health of the planet, because people really need to understand the connection between food production and how it affects the environment. We're going to be talking to Jenny Brown today, and she is a co-founder, along with Doug Abel, of the Woodstock Animal Sanctuary. And they moved to Woodstock as full-time residents in May 2004. Doug is a film editor, and Jenny previously worked as a producer, director, and post-production supervisor. They met while working for the filmmaker Errol Morris in Boston, while Doug played a key role in editing the Academy Award-winning documentary, The Fog of War. Jenny's credits include work on the PBS series Frontline and Nova, ABC's 9/11 special report from Ground Zero, and most recently she produced and directed a show for Discovery Channel's Extreme Engineering series, A Transatlantic Tunnel. Since the early 90s, Jenny would occasionally volunteer her time working undercover as a videographer for PETA and Farm Sanctuary. After her last week-long trip undercover visiting stockyards in Texas, she decided to give up her TV career and dedicate her life to helping these animals that society seems to have forgotten. Jenny moved to Watkins Glen, New York, to live and work at Farm Sanctuary and learn all she could about shelter operations. It was that essential experience that gave the couple the confidence to open up a sanctuary of their own. And we're going to be hearing a lot more about Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary in this hour. Jenny, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Karen.
Oh, gosh, I'm so glad we finally got the opportunity to talk.
Great. Yep, we finally connected.
Yeah,
sorry about the crazy schedules.
Well, you know, the busy people, we get more done.
We're getting stuff done.
That's right. I just wanted to tell the listeners that we are streaming live today. If you want to watch the show, you can. And you can also call in at 1-888-874-4888. Okay, great. Jenny, tell me everything that's going on at the Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary.
Well, we started the sanctuary. Sorry, did I cut you off?
No. I get all these great emails about the things that are happening.
Well, we do keep busy, which you basically have to do if you're running a charity. Farm animal welfare issues are not mainstream philanthropic issues with lots of people who give charitably, and unless you're someone who basically knows about the issues with farm animals and what's going on in today's animal agriculture and in these and factory farming, and lots of people just think that it's a very strange thing that we're a shelter for farm animals, and if they're eating farm animals, then oftentimes, you know, they want to draw that disconnect and they sort of don't want to know about their suffering. Their money, if they claim to love animals, their money often goes to cat and dog shelters, you know, animals that we know and love as companion animals.
Right.
But what we have asked people to do from the conception of the Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary is to think beyond that. And I think, as Albert Einstein said, you know, to expand your circle of compassion. And what we try to get people to do here is see farm animals as something other than hot wings and bacon, and to come visit these animals, because we are home to over 200 rescued food production animals. That's where our focus lies.
Okay, let's just back up a minute.
Okay.
So there's roughly 60 billion land animals that are killed every year for food, and that includes chickens and pigs and cows and turkeys and a host of other animals.
Right.
And most of them, probably more than 99%, are confined in filthy, disgusting, horrifically cruel factory farms. Most of them don't see the light of day. They can't move very often, or if they can, it's very little. Birds can't expand their wings. They live in their own filth, and they're fed things that they shouldn't be fed. Many of these animals are vegetarian, and they're fed rendered
other
animals
that
have been sick. And it's just a unbelievable sci-fi kind of scenario, but it's actually happening. And so this is to provide people with flesh, animal flesh that people eat. And we could certainly feed everyone on this planet with plant foods. It would be a lot more efficient, a lot cleaner. We wouldn't have the climate change problems that we have today. People would be a lot healthier. And so what we like to do on this show, and I'm sure you talk about it quite a bit at the Sanctuary, is what the impact of our diet is and the benefits of plant food. Now, out of those 60 billion animals, there are a handful of them that escape or, for one reason or another, end up, 200 of them, at your sanctuary.
Right. And everybody has a unique rescue story. But strangely enough, we're just 2 hours north of New York City. Lots of these animals are coming from the over 100 live kill markets down in the city. So often we're not taking in, even though, yes, that's where most animals dwell, are these factory farms, these CAFOs, which are basically massive confinement operations, confinement and feeding operations, where animals' welfare is not a factor in the daily operations of these places. But the animals that we have here have either been seized from the local SPCA, they've been found running around Prospect Park, a chicken. We just got a call this morning for yet another chicken down in the city, seen, you know, between some cars just running around in a neighborhood. And that's because I think there's so many different cultures down in the city, and lots of these cultures are used to going right into a market, picking out a baby goat, a lamb, a chicken, a pheasant, a rabbit, whatever it is that they look to eat, and they either take the animal home alive and they slaughter it according to either religious customs, or if there's something like Santeria going on, the animals are used in like religious sacrifice. We just took in 93 what's known as broiler birds. These are the birds that are raised specifically for meat that reach a profitable slaughter weight at 45 days of age. These are the birds that are trucked in by the thousands down into areas like Williamsburg and Brooklyn, and there are neighborhoods where Hasids and Orthodox Jews still practice something known as Kipporos.
Yeah.
It happens during Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement. It's a ceremony where they swing a live chicken around their head, casting their sins into that chicken, and then the chicken slaughtered. Back in the day, it used to be that those carcasses would go to feed the poor. In this day and age, with food and drug safety issues, most of the time these little birds are just thrown away. So that's an example of 93 birds that just came here recently, and we worked with other sanctuaries to sort of farm them out.
How did you get the birds?
Well, we went down there, and there was a lot of begging and pleading, and we refused to exchange any words with these people. We're trying to be respectful of their religion. But there were a few people that handed them over. There was a crate that tipped over, and a number of them ran out, and we were able to scoop up a few.
Yeah.
The injured ones, one of the activists went over and asked if we could have any injured ones. We took a few that they wouldn't have sold and that were languishing anything with no food or water, crammed in crates with, you know, about a dozen other birds. And then we did hear of one activist that was going up and pretending to be participating in the ceremony and was buying the birds to save their lives.
Oh,
but
wow. Nice.
We don't really condone that practice,
right,
because we don't want to put money back into,
sure,
the pockets of these people who are doing these things. So that's against our policy, but when a little sick animal, a little injured,
yeah,
thirsty animal is brought to you, you know, there's no way you can, I at least for me, that I can turn away from them. Their life matters very much, no matter how they got into my hands, you know.
It's a terrible tradition, and I know that there are more and more that are changing, swinging the chicken over their head with a bag of money.
Yeah, it's a much more contemporary and progressive thing to do that's widely accepted. There's nothing in the Torah that says that it has to be a chicken, and so, you know, there's lots of discussion over that. But
unfortunately, that's just one of millions and millions of activities that go on where animals are abused.
Absolutely. But when people wonder where these animals come,
mm-hmm,
from, sadly, the animals that are languishing in factory farms, you know, they live their entire life in a giant industrial shed, and then they're loaded onto transport trucks that take them to the slaughterhouse. So there's rarely an opportunity to rescue these animals unless, you know, an animal was able to squeeze through the slats on the truck and jumped off,
right,
the back of the truck, which is how Miss Piggy came to us. But there's a bunch of different stories. But what we do here is, you know, we advocate on behalf of these animals. These animals are effectively ambassadors to the cause, because we're so disconnected from our food in this day and age that people typically don't sit down and think about that perfectly round burger or patty between two pieces of bread as having been someone. So our work here is trying to bridge that gap, bring people in touch with animals that they've only known as food, and see them as something other than food. And here, while you're seeing this animal, while you're meeting Judy or Patsy the pig or Dylan the steer or Henrietta the hen, you're learning how others like them are living right now in order to become food. And what we also try to get people to see is that our meat and dairy consumption is basically just a deeply ingrained cultural habit. It's tradition. All of us that work here are vegan. We'd like to show that we're living proof that you can, subsist on a plant-based diet without getting sickly and looking underweight or gaunt or grayish, you know, whatever these claims are that people put on us. It's for the trivial pleasure of our palate, 10 billion farm animals, land animals, are killed in this country alone.
Right.
People are shocked when they think about the fact that 3.4 million cats and dogs are euthanized in this country annually,
mm-hmm,
but when you think about the 27 million that are slaughtered in this country every day, again, because we basically think they taste good.
Right.
There's so much evidence out there that proves that we don't need animal products in our diet. In fact, as books like the China Study have shown, we're doing more damage to ourselves by consuming these products than we are reaping the benefits. And so people come here, the most educated, sophisticated, cultured New York City socialite, and you see these people as we take people on tours on the weekends. We're open on the weekends to the public, only April through October. We take people on these farm tours, and people have never even stopped to think about the fact that, say, a cow had to have a calf in order to produce milk.
Yeah, it's incredible, the disconnect. Incredible.
And, you know, when you think about it, these animals are so much a part of our lives, not only three times a day with most people when you sit down to have a meal, but we wear their leather, we use their wool. We use these animals however we see fit. And there are some that believe that animals are here for us. And
yeah,
it's a very speciesist point of view, but somehow, you know, as their parents were led to believe and our doctors are led to believe, we need these animal products in our diet. They are, you know, it's for protein, it's for calcium. And basically, it's just very clever advertising campaigns on behalf of the dairy industry with their milk mustaches and that sort of thing, that's keeping this information from the public. We teach our, you know, we read these school books to our kids. Old MacDonald had a farm with these bucolic images of animals grazing in the fields and pigs wallowing in the mud, and it doesn't exist.
No, and there are commercials, too, today where we still see those green pasture is filled with happy cows, the California dairy. It's a vicious lie.
It really is a vicious lie. It's a broken and corrupt system where our USDA is made up of people who have sat at the heads of ConAgra and Monsanto and Cargill and these giant corporations that have basically corrupted our food policies and are the systems in government that are supposed to protect us and oversee what it is that the American diet is and subsidies go.
Have you been in California and passed through the area that people nicknamed Cowschwitz?
No, I haven't, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I think it's dry lot after dry lot, and it's the feed lots. Dry lots are basically what 90% of dairy cows live on this day and age, where they never go out to pasture. They're kept in large industrial sheds. They're milked. Maybe they get to walk outside and have their meals while they're cleaning up the parlor and before they go back in for their second or third milking of the day. But feed lots are where every kind of beef cattle in this country, the last 2 to 3 months of life, it's where they are basically converted over from grass to corn and soy, and often slaughterhouse remains, chicken poop from the massive either the meat chicken industry or the egg industry. These are all animal products, and they even consider the waste of chickens to be an animal product.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all fed to cattle to fatten them up. And in order to keep them from getting sick, that's when we start pumping them full of antibiotics, because they're not meant to eat these foods. We're converting them from what they're meant to eat as herbivores, grass, over to what's basically heavily subsidized crops, corn and soy. And it makes them sick. Therefore, to prevent illness and before their livers and kidneys and their various organs shut down, they're killed.
You know, the last few sentences have been big mouthfuls of information, and I think we need to talk a little bit more about all of them because they're so huge. So not only is what we're doing with factory farming, cramming animals in these horrible situations, not only is it horrifically cruel, but there are so many things that are so unhealthy about the, quote, food that's being made in these factory farm. So you mentioned the antibiotics that these animals are being fed in order to prevent them from becoming sick, because they're in such a filthy, unhealthy environment, they can't help but pick up disease. And the recumbent bovine growth hormone that's given to cows to create more milk makes their udders very inflamed. And they're just so uncomfortable and so sick, and so we feed them antibiotics. And then when you eat the meat or the dairy products, you're getting concentrated versions of those antibiotics. And so we're now starting to see antibiotic resistance as a result.
And right, and when you become
sick, humans,
you really need those antibiotics. They're not going to work.
They're not going to work. And then, oh my God, there's so many other issues here. So imagine these animals eating all of the garbage, and I love recycling, but this is really an ugly form of recycling where excrement is literally fed back to the animals, and animal flesh and remains to animals that are naturally vegetarian. Cows are vegetarian animals, and they're fed animal flesh, they're fed excrement, they're fed all the garbage that can be swept up from the floor. They consume it, and then you're ultimately going to eat their flesh or their dairy products, and there are toxins in there. There's just all kinds of things that you don't want to consume.
No. And when you think about you're consuming the flesh of an animal that consumed that, it's repulsive to me.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, we're so disconnected. People go to a restaurant, they're socializing, they're busy, they're working on their computer. They have a plate of food brought to them. They never stop. There's not even a visual that appears in their minds of a cow or of a pig or of a chicken. We're so disconnected, and people just simply choose not to think about it. But with the bovine growth hormones, like you've just mentioned, this is starting to make its way into infant formulas.
Oh,
and
gosh.
There was just recently a huge issue of children in China growing breasts before they were a year old because of the concentrations of powdered milk that they were receiving, and because it was not labeled that the cows had received bovine growth hormones. So it's just, you know, even my own 9-year-old cousin, I'm from Kentucky, my 9-year-old cousin started her menstruation and had breasts larger than me because she had a steady diet of McDonald's and hot dogs. She was never made to eat any vegetables.
Nine years old. That shouldn't happen until 17 if we were on a healthy plant-based diet.
Early development. And that's a personal story from in my own family.
Yeah.
And so it's just... the problem is lack of information. The problem is it begins in the classroom where there's never any connection made to children who have an inherent love for animals.
The lie begins in the classroom.
The lie begins in the classroom. Because nobody ever tells the kids that a cow has to produce milk, has to have a calf in order to produce milk, and that that milk was actually meant for that calf. And so that we can drink the milk that rightfully belongs to that calf becomes veal, if it's male, the females will later replace their mothers, and then after going through the hell of being artificially inseminated every 9 months and milked while she's pregnant and her calves taken away from her within hours of birth so that she doesn't connect, which is was false.
Oh,
so
they scream, when their babies are taken from them.
If everybody could see a calf being taken away from its mother and to hear her cries and to hear the cries of the baby and to see her depression and her listlessness and wandering around and calling for her baby. This is happening at this very moment so that people can drink the milk that rightfully belongs to these calves. And I pose to people, think about the fact that we're the only species that drinks milk into adulthood and we're the only species that drinks the milk of other species. Cow's milk has natural occurring hormones and antibiotics for cows. For us, it's leading to osteoporosis. The industry wants us to believe that we all need it for healthy bones, but in fact,
it's the opposite, the reverse
is the truth. And folks never stop to think about, also even myself, I mean, I became a vegetarian at 18 years old, grew up in Louisville, Kentucky. I did not have forward-thinking, liberal, bohemian, tree-hugging parents. You know, I grew up in a Southern Baptist household with a single mother. We lived with my grandparents for years. I didn't have a vegetarian in my life. I didn't even know the word vegetarian, I think, until my freshman semester of college. But so I want people to see where I come from. I ate plenty of meat. I ate plenty of dairy. Flank steak was my favorite. I loved pork chops. I loved bacon. My sister and I used to fight over the turkey heart at Thanksgiving because my grandfather would say that, you know, don't you want another heart? It makes your heart bigger. And it repulses me now that I think of having eaten an animal's organ. When we really look at what it is, it's pretty repulsive, like eggs being a product of a chicken's menstrual cycle. It's kind of nasty. But we never stop and think about these things because we're not a part of that process.
Right.
And to think about it is inconvenient for people. You know, unless you go out and look for this information and sit at your computer and Google it and look at the images and allow yourself to see and be informed, things are never going to get better.
I remember watching on Sesame Street, now this was a long time ago, maybe in its early days, but for some reason this line always stuck with me, and it was a program on the farm and on dairy cows, and there was a line where they said, the cow makes much too much milk for its young calf to drink.
Ugh.
It was exactly that. It just, rung in my head, and I thought back to it later because it was a lie.
It was a total lie.
And it's, as you mentioned, number one, a cow does not make milk unless she becomes pregnant and gives birth.
And to keep her productivity up, she goes through that every 9 to 10 months. It's not like one calf and she magically produces milk for the rest of her life.
That's
either,
right.
Which
That's
is
right.
what many people also believe.
People just don't think about it. Yeah.
But for me, at 18 years old and became a vegetarian, it took me until I did undercover work in 2002 to where I saw a whole, like, dozens of veal calves being unloaded off the truck to be sold from a local dairy operation to be sold at the livestock auction happening in that area, and to see all these little male calves that are so weak. They've only been given a couple of hours with their mothers. They only had their very first colostrum, and then, you know, and the farmers get rid of them as soon as they can, unless they have a sidearm operation for veal. What took me a long time to realize is there's actually more suffering in the dairy and egg industry than there are if you were to just go out and eat the meat. And honestly, that is so not condoning to please go out and eat the meat. I'm just saying, for myself, I thought, you know, as long as animals weren't being killed, I wasn't eating animal flesh, that that, you know, I had no ethical dilemma with that.
Yeah.
But when you look at the life of a dairy cow, and
it's
from
so much worse.
And that she's killed at 4 or 5 years of age to become hamburger meat because her body is so broken, and she's, you know, and her spirit is broken from having calf after calf taken away from her. She's, you know, these ideas of these Holsteins out grazing in massive pastures are literally 2% of dairy operations.
I'm not sure how it happened, but I think more people are aware of the situation with veal calves and how cruel it is than any other animal operation.
And I think it's because we have sympathy with babies. You know, we get people who, before, as I'm introducing them to our rescued veal calves that are now 2,500 pound steer, what I often have people say, it's just their moment that they feel like, aha, I do love animals, I know about these issues, I haven't eaten veal in 20 years when I learned where it came from.
Yeah, but they're drinking the milk.
Do you still have creamer in your coffee?
Yeah.
Do you choose to have a slice of cheese on your sandwich?
Oh, I can't live without cheese.
You're directly supporting the veal industry and the suffering of a dairy cow.
Yeah, then they'll tell you
the emotional suffering and the physical suffering, and her life is beyond our worst imagination, truly.
Yes, but then they'll tell you they can't live without cheese.
Yeah, and I just ask people to really take a look at how a dairy cow lives and then look in your mirror and tell yourself that. And if you're someone that really cares about animals, walk away and see how much you can respect yourself.
Yeah. Look them in the eye.
Truly the trivial pleasure of your palate, that it's so important to you that you're going to pay somebody to do the dirty work. You're going to go out, you're going to use your consumer dollars to pay for products that come from animal cruelty. And I think that most of us, when we stop and think about it, nobody wants to think they're contributing to animal cruelty. But no matter what, I don't care if it's Horizon, I don't care if it's one of these organic farms, lots of people don't realize that organic has, the term organic has zero to do with animal welfare.
That's right.
That only means that these dairy cows are not being fed bovine growth hormones, antibiotics, and that the feed they're eating is quote unquote all natural, meaning it hasn't been sprayed with pesticides. But so, you know, lots of people have this false sense of feel good because they think they're eating more sustainable products, or they get it from Whole Foods and it was grass fed. It still does not mean, I mean, for me, philosophically, animals just aren't here for us to enslave and to exploit and to do anything we want to do with. So it's not even a question of whether or not they were grass-fed or not. They're still sent there to their untimely deaths for a product that we choose to consume but that we don't physically need.
Jenny, I totally agree with you. We're going to have to take a little break, and we have so much more to talk about. So please stay with me, and we will be back in a couple of minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You are listening to PRN. Progressive Radio Network.
The shaky economy, peak oil, and now an unstable climate. Get the inside story with Alex Smith on Radio EcoShock. Top scientists find a looming catastrophe while activists try for change. Experts, authors, and alternative media from around the world and around the corner. Hear it all. Radio EcoShock every Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Listen free and live free right here on PRN, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Hello, this is Eric Ochsner, your host of the best jazz show on the air on Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz, every Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I play the best jazz ever recorded by Louis, Sidney, Bessie, Billy, and all the others. Remember, Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz, every Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
You're listening to Bhavani, and I'd like to welcome you every Wednesday on the Progressive Radio Network to join me for my show called I Eat Green, where every Wednesday we will talk about eating healthy and eating sustainably for our planet. So join me every Wednesday from 5 to 6.
Join us, Bruce and Marianne Curtis, Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network for Truth and Freedom. We present provocative conversations with the world's most brilliant minds in the areas of holistic health, spiritual wisdom, politics, and a host of other topics. Some of our topics include the latest work in non-invasive therapy on the brain, the truth beneath the global economic meltdown, healing power of the breath, and the sublime truth beyond all religious traditions. In this age of transformation, we need to look beneath the surface appearance of things to see the underlying reality. For material that is always illuminating and often liberating, tune in to Truth and Freedom on the Progressive Radio Network, Fridays at 3 p.m.
This is Bill Bowie.
And this is Kelsey Flynn.
Of Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability.
We bring you news and interviews
with the likes of Wangari Maathai, Bill McKibben, Hazel Henderson, Paul Hawken, Francis Moore LePay, and many others. Tune in to Sea Change Radio here on the Progressive Radio Network on Saturdays at 7 in the evening.
Progressive Radio Network, celebrating 5 years of independent news.
I'm Karen Hartglass. We're back, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And I'm here today with Jenny Brown of the Woodstock Farm and Animal Sanctuary. And you can check out the Woodstock Sanctuary at the website woodstocksanctuary.org. Okay, Jenny.
Yes.
I gave you a moment to take a breath because you were just spewing out all kinds of very important information, and
it's such a broad subject and one that so needs more attention.
I know. It should be front page news every day.
It should be the social justice movement of our times.
Yeah, it should be, basically.
It really should be, because it affects the most number of beings. You know, it's 10 billion in this country alone, 10 billion farm animals, not even going into the trillions of sea animals, but 10 billion farm animals.
I want to talk about some of the responses I get from people when I talk about this subject. And
okay.
One of the things, you've probably heard it before, is that, oh, you care so much about animals. What about human beings?
I.
And so there are so many issues here. Certainly eating animals in the quantities that we do today is so unhealthy. But people don't realize that factory farms are probably where the greatest number of accidents occur in the workplace for humans.
Right. No, I mean, there's all sorts of, there's 100% turnover annually. It is listed as the most dangerous job to work in a slaughterhouse. So, you know, I mean, there's many reasons. That, when people say that to me, it just...
It's a distraction, and,
it honestly
just shows how much more they really don't understand about what's going on.
Absolutely, because you can prevent the suffering of these animals by not buying these products with your consumer dollars. And when people say that, I mean, I think it was the great Peter Singer that just says, I often feel compelled, you know, what they're doing for human causes that allows them to so carelessly support such animal cruelty. You know, and we do lots here. We do lots in terms of helping. There's elderly groups that come out here. There's mentally disturbed youth that come out here, and how therapeutic it is to work with animals. We're doing all sorts of good stuff. But when people say that, not only is that against my personal beliefs, because it's a very speciesist concept that we come first. Humans should come first. But for the, you know, I grew up in the South, and I came from a very Christian family, where often when the debate happens with my family, it goes back to the Bible, and that they feel like they can pull from all these passages that, you know, man has dominion over animals. They were put here for us to eat, and that's that. And so they have this fundamental religious idea that helps shape their morals and their ethics.
But we could always go back to Genesis 1:29.
Yeah, when it was a vegan world.
That's
the perfect
right.
world was a vegan world. But I also, you know, the thing is that most people living in the Northeast, I meet more and more people that are agnostic or they're atheist. So they've got this deeply ingrained notion that, well, it's just always been that way, so how could it be wrong? But what I ask people to consider is that for most of civilization, for most of our existence as humans, we have owned slaves. Mm. We look back at that now, and we're repulsed, and we've moved beyond that. But only in the past 100 years have women had rights. Have there been laws that protected children from abusive child labor practices? Change happens, and we look back at these things as we evolve compassionately, as we evolve morally, and we look back and we're embarrassed of these histories.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I hope, and I don't know if we'll see it in my lifetime, but I really, this is becoming finally an issue that's being discussed. Sadly, more often than not, it's because of the toll it takes on human health and because of the environmental toll it takes. But so much good can come from moving away from an animal product-based diet. Because when you look at how unsustainable it is, you know, the Smithsonian Institute came out with a study recently that said worldwide we're taking down the equivalent of 7 football fields every, I think it was minute, specifically to grow the grain to feed the livestock. I don't like to use the word livestock, but to feed the chickens, the pigs, and the cows. That 30 pounds of grain is what it takes to produce a single pound of meat. That 30 pounds of grain could have fed 15 people a day's ration of food. So when people come up with those ridiculous comments, what are you doing, you know, humans should come first. What I'm here doing and advocating for can affect a huge number of people.
It's the best for everyone. It's the best for everyone.
You know, and I don't mean to say it that way. I really try to be an effective spokesperson for farm animals.
Here's another question. Somebody asked me this the other day, and I've heard this one before. What would happen to all the animals in all the farms if everyone became a vegan today? Where would they all go?
And that is another incredibly asinine question. Sorry. But basically,
I know.
They would, you know, it's a non-issue because these animals only exist for us to eat them.
That's right.
They not realize that they are massively bred and produced for the sole purpose of being killed. So it's a ridiculous and rhetorical question.
Well, but people are so disconnected, they really don't know what's going on. They don't realize that these animals are artificially...
It's incredibly frustrating to me. I can feel my blood pressure come up every time. But it's truly, it's a ridiculous question. We'll always keep... These animals will always exist in sanctuaries and in other places where they get to live out a normal life. I mean, this is my perfect outcome, where they get to live out a normal life. It's not an issue of they would cease to exist. But would you want to exist to be confined, mutilated, denied even your most basic instinct, and then be brutally murdered because somebody thinks you taste good and because you're only seen as a production unit and not a sentient being? I mean, the question, if people could stop and really answer that question in their own mind, I think they would think first before putting something so absurd out there.
So I liken the farm sanctuaries that are out there saving individual animals to the stories that we heard, like Schindler's List with the Holocaust, where even though millions of people were killed, a few people were saved, and those people are extremely grateful.
You're on dangerous ground there, though. You pose the, make that comparison to
I always do. I always do. I know they get hysterical.
It infuriates people because, again, humans matter most in most people's mind. How dare you, you know, compare the suffering of an animal to the suffering of a human? And to really say, to say that is such is so small-minded.
Yeah.
It really is. And it just goes to show how far we've got to go. And that's eternally frustrating to me. But if you were an alien species and you were to hover above our Earth and you would, you know, without coming in knowing anything, and you looked at all the various species, the you know, all the, from the tiny insect to the giant elephant to horses to people to cats, dogs to pigs. And then if you really studied and took a look at who is the most monstrous, who is the most barbaric, who's causing the most damage to this earth, it's us. And, you know, and so we would look like, I mean, if the devil, this is, if animals could, had a religion and they could communicate amongst themselves, which I know that they do, but I know that the devil would be depicted in human form.
Absolutely.
Because to them, we are the oppressor, we are the exploiters, we're the murderers. And for everyone that isn't out there that's paying somebody to slaughter the chicken or to slaughter the pig, where else in your life do you pay someone to do the dirty work that you yourself probably couldn't do? You know, for everyone that says, oh, but I have to eat meat, and oh, my doctor says I have to, and I just have to, and all these excuses that you hear. If you can't go out, look into the eyes of a steer, wrestle it to the ground, slaughter it, and then butcher all the parts and pack them in your freezer, I just feel like where else in your life do you pay somebody to do the dirty work?
Yep.
And isn't that against your own ethics? But again, this is, it's the day of convenience. You know, we live in a day of, I am running late to this meeting, I'm just going to stop and get a sandwich, and I am never in a million years going to think about who that is between those pieces of bread.
Yeah, well, capitalism seems to be based on a big disconnect with so many things. But I want to spend the next few minutes, or our last quarter of the hour, on talking about some really lovely things. So can you tell me some stories, like you were talking about the pig, the most recently rescued pig, was it maybe? Or
well, the most recent pig is little Stanley, who was just found running around a neighborhood in Hyde Park, New York, about a week ago, and was picked up. We don't really know what his story is, but he's a little 13.5-pound piglet that somehow escaped his fate. But Judy and Patsy, for example, are two pigs that are 3 years old now. They came, there was a man who had been charged with animal cruelty, believe it or not, and had a record, but he was squatting on state land raising animals for slaughter.
Wow.
And these animals some of these animals were discovered by some hikers or something, and they called the authorities, and the mother was already gone, but Judy and Patsy and four of their siblings were all rescued, and that's how they got to us. But these are sisters who are inseparable. And if you can, if the unique opportunity of sanctuaries is that we, people can come here and they observe these animals, and it just, it doesn't become this intangible idea that animals are sentient beings. When you see, for example, Judy and Patsy together, these two girls love each other. They spoon, they sleep belly to belly, they've got their little hooves on each other's face. They spend their days roaming around together, they get in little fights, who wants to lay where. You know, these are really complex social structures that these animals have. And there's, you know, I mean, from every chicken here has a name. They've got a rescue story. Many of them, again, found running around neighborhoods down in Brooklyn or the Bronx, or little Albie, for example. And there was a New York Times story about Albie. He was found, he's a goat that was found running around Prospect Park in Brooklyn. He was picked up by Animal Care and Control. And the big concern with him initially was that he had these sores all over his mouth. And he basically had what's known as sore mouth, and it's highly contagious to people. It's also known as ORF. So all this attention was being paid to his mouth, and they called me up, and, you know, I said, use gloves and wear ISO suits. They brought him here the next day. What I noticed immediately is that he had been hogtied with some type of wire, which means he was probably purchased from one of these live kill markets in the city. He was hogtied, so all four of his legs were bound together with some kind of tight wire, and then somehow he escaped that fate.
Wow.
But one of his legs, the in two of his legs, there were lacerations, and upon closer examination, within an hour after he got here, we discovered maggots crawling out of the wound of one, and the bone was so infected, the flesh and the bone was so infected that after trying everything, we ended up having this little animal's leg amputated, and he wears an artificial leg. Like myself, who had cancer at the age of 10, so one of the things that I overcame as a child, and, you know, 3 years of chemotherapy, and I wear a prosthetic limb myself, I asked my prosthetist to make a leg for little Albie.
Wow.
And so he has grown out of like five of them. We have another appointment soon where he's going to be fitted. Dylan, our rescued veal calf, who's now a 1,500-pound steer, he's a younger guy. He was chained to a he was chained up to a tree at a farm, a dairy farm in Troy, and some people that lived in the area saw him and learned that he was on his way to the next livestock auction where he would have become veal, and they talked the farmer into letting them have him, spare this one. And they had him for 24 hours, realized, ooh, I don't know what I'm doing, and then they called us.
Right.
So, I mean, every animal here has a story. We have sheep that came from one of the worst hoarding cases in the history of Pennsylvania. This woman had kind of lost her mind. There were dead, dying, diseased animals all over the place, waste everywhere, and lambs found living down in her basement, you know, as well as chickens in her house and things like that. Just kooky people. You know, so there's so many stories to tell here, and while you're here and you're meeting these animals and you're learning their rescue stories and hearing a little bit about their personality and what they like to do and some of the crazy things, like we have a couple of sheep who I swear to you have taught themselves that in order to get attention, they give you the hoof. Like the dog will give you the paw, and you'll feel that on your legs, and they'll like paw you for attention. We have sheep that will give you the hoof because they really want your attention. You know, we have chickens that once they lose their fear of people, or if we rescued them when they were young, they're so inquisitive. They'll come right over and hop in your lap and want to be pet.
Yeah, they're incredibly sensitive, incredibly smart.
Exactly. And people just do not realize this. And so we have such a great opportunity here to, with every person that walks in our door, we have the opportunity of changing their dietary habits and say if they become vegan, which many people do after leaving here, and they vow off animal products. That's 100 animal lives a year we've saved, because that's the equivalent that someone eating meat and dairy, 100 animal lives are gone for that person's diet. So we can save 100 animal lives per person every year if we can move more towards a plant-based diet.
So if somebody wants to come up to your sanctuary, what do they do and what will they expect?
Well, this is the end of our season right now, and so we're open to the public April through October. And that's only on the weekends from 11 to 4. Next weekend, this coming weekend, is our last weekend of the season. But volunteers can come any time during the year. And you just basically have to shoot us an email from the website woodstocksanctuary.org, and we sign you up to help out that day. And when you're here and you're helping to shovel some poo, there's many opportunities to love on over 200 beautiful souls while you're here, and to interact and spend time with them, and to get to know them, because they love, once these animals, they just have this amazing ability to forgive and to get on with life, and they have a lot to teach us in that way. And so volunteers get so much out of coming up here, and for those who share our philosophy and truly believe that animals are here with us and not for us, it's a sanctuary for people too. But if you're coming here, say you just want to know more, you're not going to come here and, you know, nobody's going to point a finger at you. We're not going to proselytize. We basically take you around, and you get to go in with the animals, and you meet them, and, you know, we've got a couple of friendly roosters and chickens that don't mind being held. You can go meet the ducks and the geese. You can give an 800 or 900 pound pig a belly rub. You can frolic with the goats and the sheep. You know, we don't let people in with the steer, because three of them have giant horns, and, you know, they could go to swat a fly on their back and disembowel somebody. So we don't let people in with the steer. But there's so many critters to meet here, and you learn about how millions of others like them are living at that very moment. We've got battery cages from where 98% of egg-laying chickens live. We have a farrowing crate where pregnant sows are forced to give birth in a cage that's hardly bigger than their own body. And then
you
have
can actually see how small they really are.
And it's shocking to some people. So for those who really want to take a look at this, even if it means they know that they might walk away and change their diet and be affected by it, we ask people to really respect themselves, care about how these other animals are treated, just simply to become, you know, ice cream and egg McMuffins or whatever, you know, and to stop and take a look and to care. And at least we don't expect people to leave here and, you know, that's it. They drop all animal products out of their diet. It's a transition. It's like finding out you're diabetic and, you know, you're gluten intolerant or lactose intolerant and coming up with other things. But with every meal that someone sits down to that doesn't contain animal products, that's a step in the right direction. The UK has their Meat Free Mondays campaign going on, and it's huge. And the whole country is rallying because they realize, again, it's not sustainable in terms of the methane that's being put out into the environment, in terms of what we're doing to the waterways, our drinking water, how there's dead zones because of the nasty bacteria and the poo and the sludgy manure, you know, that comes from these massive confinement operations, factory farms, and what they're doing to our waterways. They're making us sick. We're destroying entire ecosystems just so that we can continue to enjoy our steak and our bacon and our chicken
it's
breast
pretty incredible.
In every freaking meal.
And there are very few regulations on factory farms, and the few that there are, the government kind of overlooks anyway.
And there's no laws that protect these animals from cruelty.
Right.
Just one example, if you don't mind, just one more tiny bit of buzzkill.
Sure. Love it.
An animal that is smarter than canines, the pig. An animal that's right up there, intelligent-wise, is dolphins.
Yeah.
If you're a two-week-old piglet, a week to 2 weeks old, a worker is going to come along, is going to pick you up, and with a knife is going to castrate you if you're a boy, cut off your tail, notch your ears, to show when you were born and what vaccines you just received.
And, of course, there's no anesthesia with any of this.
Oh, no. There's no painkillers. There's no numbing agent. Nothing. And they're going to pull out your incisor teeth. And they do this because they pack them in together so tightly that just like with every animal, they will get bitey, they will fight. Those injuries lead to profit losses because of deaths. So for an animal that's more intelligent to a dog than a dog, if your neighbor were to pick up their dog's litter of puppies, castrate them, cut off the tail, notch the ears, and rip out their teeth, there would be public outcry. But this is happening right at this very moment to hundreds of thousands of pigs today in this country, and there are no laws that protect them. And that is morally bankrupt. And we need to look at how our society is treating these other beings that share this earth with us and to stop and think about how we're not living our own values.
That's pretty good. That's a big mouthful.
Yeah, I got some mouthfuls.
Now, you've actually done some undercover work. And so you've been to the farms.
I think anybody who says, it's just a chicken, I don't care. I think everybody should go and take a walk down inside a factory farm.
Oh, well, the thing is, you
can't. These animals are being slaughtered.
But you can't. They're really careful now because of the few undercover films that have come out.
You can't get into these places.
They're making it really impossible to see what's going on. And that's another thing that's really crazy in how the government lets them get away with it, because any other food facility you can get a tour of. But this is one place that you can't.
The meat and dairy industries are right up there with oil and pharmaceuticals. They are filtering money into our politicians' pockets on a state and federal level, and it's a broken and corrupt system.
But there is something that we can do, and that is not support it.
Absolutely.
It's so simple.
And to try to look at other options for your health, for your weight, for the environment, for your children. Get the wool off your eyes and realize that to some degree we've all been brainwashed, and to look at the truth and to see how these animals are living, and don't allow yourself to think that you're buying this organic this or this free range this and that you're an ethical person.
Jenny, thank you so much. I hope that 1/10 of your passion has touched all of our listeners enough to make a difference in their own lives.
Well, thank you. And again, people can check out WoodstockSanctuary.org to learn more.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to coming up and visiting.
We'd love to have you, Karen.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to It's All About Food. That was Jenny Brown from Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary. And I'm Karen Hartglass. This has been It's All About Food. Have a delicious week.